Hello and welcome to In Conversation. And I have with me Dr. Mark Prince, and who is my guest again. Mark, thank you very much for being with us. And interestingly enough, we'll come to the doctor part, because I know that's an honorary doctor that you received. I'd like to hear about that. Yeah. But in the last program, you were telling us about your journey in life and how life was for you as a child, as a teenager.
That's right.
And how God began to impact your life in a magnificent way, in some powerful testimonies. And we left the last show with you at this conundrum where you were literally about to have your house repossessed. So let's pick it up from there. Just backtrack a little bit and then go into what happened.
Yeah. So I was just saying that the actual team of guys came, because boxing, after the accident, my life had just spiraled downhill. There's no finance. I couldn't walk. There was not much I could do to create the revenue to bring in for the family, and just financial problems upon financial problems, until the house got repossessed and the guys came round, and then I just was praying in front of my window.
So how many were outside your house?
There was 1, 2, 3, 4. There was four. I remember there was a solicitor, a locksmith, and two officers that ensure that everything's done right. They were like the lead officers for the move, and they made it clear that, you know, there was no way they could go around it. And they had the contract that said they had to get us out, so they had to make sure that that was going to happen. And they went back out. I went back to the window and was looking out, and I prayed, and I said to God, "This, you gave me this house, not them. So they can't take it." So I asked God to intervene even then at that late hour. And the most amazing thing happened. As they came back in the house, two of the guys, and said,
So they got into your house?
Yeah, that was in. That was in my house. They were talking with me in the house, looking around, said, you know, we can give you a bit of time to get some stuff. And I knew I wasn't even going to attempt to try and pack anything, because everyone, the whole family's things is in there. Kishon, did I have Micaiah at the time? I'm not even sure, but Kishon, Micaiah, my wife's things were there. I couldn't remove all the stuff from my furniture and everything. So they gave me time, but I believed that God was going to save me. So I didn't pack when they gave me the time to do so. I think we had a court case the week before, lost it. So they were going to repossess. We knew the date they were coming, but I didn't do anything. So now they're here, but they come back inside the room in the hallway and said, "Listen, Mr. Prince, we're waiting." I forgot who they said they were waiting for. They were waiting on one person wanted to come and to give the go-ahead for it all to be taken away. And they said, if we leave, then they can't do what they need to do if we leave.
Okay.
So then after they said, I was looking, thinking, what are you saying? So I'm trying to figure out what they're saying. And then they looked at each other and they said, look, all right, we're off. You know, these guys are taking long. We're off now. And I'm looking like, huh? And I said, oh, okay. And they was gone. They left, so they drove off. But everyone else was still outside. Solicitor, locksmith. So I go back on my knees to praying at the window. So, Lord, these guys are gone, but these guys are still here. So it was like the threat's still there. So I went up, Lord, please, you know, get rid of everyone. And so I walked back outside, started talking with the locksmith, saying, we don't know why those two guys left. They're phoning them up, and they've been told to come back. And he said, I'm waiting here for them to come back. And so the solicitor guy was there. He was like, I'm just waiting for them to come back. They never came. About an hour later, I saw the cars drive off. That was it, man.
I
never got my house repossessed.
Wow.
I never got my house repossessed.
Wow. Amazing.
And somehow found the way to continue struggling. I wasn't out the out of the forest. I found a way through.
Yeah.
But I was always scraping. I was always, you know, I never sorted out the debt to get that sorted. But God kept me in that house.
Yeah. And that's a marvelous testimony because I suppose as a boxer, you was getting steady income coming in.
Yeah. Well, flow maybe of not income. Steady, but what I'd get would cover the space that I didn't get.
Yeah.
Because boxing's a funny sport. You know, you're not getting paid weekly unless you've got a sponsor.
Right.
And sponsorship those times is harder to get than it is now.
Right.
So if I missed 8 months out of the ring, then that would affect you unless you're going to get money that covers 8 months out of the ring.
Okay.
So, you know, being at that stage where I was fighting for like my IBF and WBO, that helped. Because you can do things with the money that you got. Mm. But you still needed to fight regular to actually build up, you know, your revenue to say that, you know, I'm becoming financially free. And that wasn't happening for me in boxing because I weren't getting regular enough fights for that to happen. And for that to happen, you need to fight every 2 months.
So there was a whole issue around that as well.
But I wasn't fighting anymore. Yeah. I was finished. My leg was finished. Mm. And I was told by the consultant that you can't box again. Mm. So that was already heartbreaking. Mm. So I've got nothing now. Mm. I've built up everything that I think that I need to build up. I changed my life. Mm. I believe that God has blessed me to be able to do so. And now it's all gone. Mm. So I turn against God and now I turn to him and say, look, I ain't got no one else to lean on. I really do trust and believe in you, so let's do this journey. So I began a different level of stage now of growth. It was about spending more time with God. It was about studying my Bible more. It was about speaking to him and understanding him more. And then I went through a period where I'd done some preaching at Holloway and Chiswick. And it was like, you know, God, what's going on? Like, you know, is this what you want me to do? Blah, blah, blah. And then I had a dream. And, and one night after I finished preaching, the Sabbath night, I had a dream. And then I woke up about 3 o'clock in the morning. I was like, just responding, like God was right there with me. I said, what? You want me to write a book called From Boxer to Doctor? And I was sort of baffled because that's what happened in the dream. Is that God said, do a book, write a book. And I was baffled. I was saying to God, why boxer to doctor? That doesn't even make sense. Mm. I'm not no doctor. Mm. And but I held on to it. Mm. I held on to it. And I remember to confirm this, when I went to Holloway next week, someone came up to me and said, a sister came up to me and said, you know, God told me that, you know, you should write a book. Mm. And I thought, wow, God is confirming it through her as well as giving it to me.
Yeah.
So I said, I know, he already told me.
Right.
So she was like, really? I said, yeah, he's even given me the name.
Okay.
She was like, okay. Right. And for years, I had this on my mind, that I've got to do this book. So I started, I didn't know what to do. How'd you do a book, you know? Mm. And I started in trying to work it all out, but it never came to fruition. And I always used to wonder, Lord, how come I can't get this book done? I know I was busy, because by then God had my son. We can't, because what we're doing, we're jumping into stuff, and my son, because in because throughout this period.
Yeah, so let's talk about your son, because obviously that is, you know, there's a whole legacy of that.
That's right.
So you're obviously you're growing in your faith, but then you have this tragic situation in your life that was to rock the core of your life.
That's
and your
right.
whole family. Tell us about what happened.
Well, so you can imagine all these other stuff going on in my life. Finances, troubles in my marriage, just, you know, life just feels a mess. But the only good thing I've got is that I'm trusting and holding onto God's hand. And what's happened is, after burying my stillborn baby, I'm thinking that it can't get any worse than this. Little do I know it does, because that was around 2003. And in 2006, my son gets stabbed in his heart, and he's my oldest son. I'm getting to the stage of my son where I've always dreamed of. Because my dad's taught me something. He's taught me not what not to do with your children. Mm. So I learned from my dad and broke the cycle. So I've got this close relationship with my son. What I wanted with my dad, I created that with my son. Mm. When my son could come and chat to me about anything. He could come and reason with me. We could hug, kiss, I tell him how much I love him, support him, we talk. He looks up to me. And so having that time where my son's doing so well and he looks up to me in a way that I want to be like my dad. I want to be successful. I want to be good. And his football is just flying. He's like the top striker for Queen's Park Rangers. He's signed for a top club. They've just signed him and said, we got plans for him to be in the first team. He's a great potential. We got great hopes for his future. And then I get a phone call and he's been stabbed at school for wanting to break up a fight. The boy pushed a knife in his heart. Mm. And this now starts another level that I don't know anything about. I thought that I knew about tough times. I thought I'd gone through tough times. But this was on another level. I don't know anything about dealing with the loss of this level. Like, I thought burying my stillborn was, like, just the worst thing. Mm. But spending 15 years with your son and having to bury him in a big box is a whole different ballgame. Mm. And if you're going to get tested in your spiritual walk, if your walk with God, that tests you to the uttermost. The uttermost. You are in the gutter. You are in the gutter. Nothing makes sense. The pain turns physical. Physical pain you're in. It materializes itself physically. They had to take me to hospital. I got all wired up with some wires to try and check my heart and see what was wrong. I used to pass out. I used to get mad panic attacks and just... Oh, man, it was terrible, terrible, terrible times trying to deal with my son. But it was amazing because throughout that time, I remember people saying, Mark, we'd be sitting with you. We'd come to visit you and then you'd be in silence, just crying. Sometimes, or just quiet. And then you'd all of a sudden start inspiring everyone in the car, because I'd go outside the house because the house is full of people. Sometimes you just want some space, and I'd sit in a car because it was... And then a few of your friends would come. Mm. Next minute, you'd have someone next to you, three guys in the back. And I'd just start talking, and I'd be talking about God and how... Son ain't died for no reason, and God's, I don't know what he's doing, but he's going to do something. And I'd still be talking like Job, because this was my time now. Mm. I wanted to be like these guys in the Bible. But you can't want to be like these guys in the Bible without going through what the guys in the Bible have been through. Mm. And they've been through some tough times, because it was the tough times that make us think, wow, and inspires us and teaches us how we need to be. So this was my time to show that I really do want to be like these guys. It's our choice. God can't make us do nothing. He presents the opportunity for greatness. And then it's for us to make that choice in what to do. And I chose, despite the pain and everything, nothing making sense. I didn't want to do what I heard all the time. I heard crying and why, and I heard a lot of that. Mm. But it didn't come out of me. Why didn't come out of me? What came out of me was, why not? Mm. Why not? Why not me? If it wasn't me, it was going to be another parent. Mm. So I'm saying, why me? Why my family? Well, the next family is going to be saying that, so why not? Why not me? Why do I have to be open, putting on the news, and it's another child, and I'm feeling for their child? Someone's going to be feeling for someone's child on the TV. So it kind of made me realize that anything could happen to anybody. So we can't take life for granted and think we're all right. Because you're not all right. You could be next on the list and you don't even know. You know, I used to sit with my friends and talk about, what would you do if someone you know, abused your child or hurt your child or killed your child, the worst case. And we were like, what? I'll be in jail. I'll do a bird. I will kill that person. And I saw, I had to go through all that. I had to go through all that. The feeling of not being able to be there for my son, not being able to save him, just feeling inadequate. And feeling like there's no control over the situation. And as human beings, we want control. We want to find a way to have control over the situation, whatever methods we use, even if they're negative methods and they don't enhance us or help us, but we find a way to let, we want to feel in control. And I'd lost all control. And I had to accept that, my friend, you don't have control. You have very minimal control. The only control you have is what you choose to do in the situation. Mm. You ain't got control over the situation. So what are you going to do? Because people talk about, oh, if this happened and that happened to me. But it's not what happened. Mm. It's how you experience what happened that's going to define you as someone that people are going to remember, you're going to stand out, God can use. Or you look at it like, woe is me, and I'm finished. That allows you to be forgotten and for people to feel sorry for you. I'm not looking for any pity in this situation. People are using their children all the time. I have to carry this grief. I have to walk with it. It's like it just lays under my skin, and I seem all right, and the next minute I'm broken again. Because of memories and thoughts and interviews and questions. And this has been my life. And I used to ask God, what is the collateral damage here? What am I going to look like after this? How am I going to function after this? I'm just going to be known as that guy. There's that guy whose son died. You know, that's my new title. I've had these thoughts. I used to ask God, will I be able to laugh from here, from my gut? Could I laugh again? And all these questions was coming up in my head. And God, because I was dealing with so much anger and revenge, God had to bring me to a place where I had to put my hands up and say, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. I can't keep having thoughts of breaking this guy's neck in court, taking, holding him, planning it, you know, getting up one day thinking, yeah, today's the day. As you walk past me, and then next minute I see three police coming in front of me saying, you know, how was it today, Mark, in court? You know, how you feeling? And then they kind of just ruined the whole plan in my head that I had of what I was going to do. And, you know, it came to the point where I cried out one day at home, just like, when I say broke down, I was finished. And out of that bawling came, you take over. Because I was trying to fix things. I was trying to sort things out. And that's not my job.
You see, you're obviously talking from a powerful, deep experience, Mark. I can obviously sense the deepness right there as well. And it's very real. I don't think anybody can definitely relate to what you're going through unless they've gone through that themselves. Yeah. But even so, every situation is unique.
That's right.
But you mentioned earlier something very powerful about for a reason. It's happening for a reason.
Yeah.
You don't just state those things, you know, commonly. You've had a real belief in that. Mm. What can you say now that, you know, a number of years have gone, what are some of those reasons now, do you think? What has come out of his passing?
What's come out of it is purpose. Purpose. From pain came purpose. I was always asking God after boxing, what now? What now? Now, did I ever think what now would come out of trauma like that? But that's what's happened. What now has come out of my son, me burying my son, me going to the cemetery. What now's come out of that? Because all my experience throughout my whole life makes sense. When I'm standing in front of young people and people are looking and saying, how do you engage with young people like that, where they react like that towards you and connect with you like that? it's because of my whole life. It's because of what God's given to me and what's inside of me, the gift that I have. Everyone has their gift. And it took a process for me to be able to understand my purpose and my gift. And sadly, very sadly, it's come out of finding it from my son. I would have probably chose another way. So God knows stuff that I don't know. He knows why he allowed this to happen. Because the enemy is always attacking us. He's always attacking us. God gets a tough deal. We blame him for everything. But he's not attacking us. You know, it was the enemy that put it on God to say, well, let me do this to Job. God's like, okay. Because remember, he's got everything under control. So he don't care if you want to get attacked. I got you. I got you. I got your son. I got your children. You know, when God allowed Satan to do what he was doing, he knows that Job's my boy. Okay, I know it hurts that you haven't got them with you now, but I got them. Not physically with me in heaven, but I've got them.
Sure.
My plan is for you to be with them again. And when I come back, I will raise them from the place of rest and you will unite with them again. So God's got that plan. So
that's a wonderful hope that we have.
That we have. Well, exactly,
but,
right.
You know, you're talking about legacy, and even in his death, there are certain things that have been happened to encourage other people who have gone through similar situations. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about the foundation that was set up.
God put it in my heart one day, and I turned to Kyan's mum and I said, do you know what, let's start an organisation that helps young people. Because I remember after my career finished, God placed it in my heart to start doing counselling, youth work, and working with young people. So obviously I wasn't getting, you know, any good money. I was volunteering for over a year, doing little work, so it wasn't any money to really help, but I found that it was the right place to be. When I'd done this work, I was like, this is really what I love doing. So I kind of found purpose already through that. Kyan's was another level. Kyan's was a level where I'm not working for you. After what happened with Kyan, I didn't go back to working for Islington Council, Hackney, all of that stuff. What I'd done is I created my own organisation. And I said, I need to be able to have the space to give these young people what I feel is necessary, the programmes that God's put in my heart to give them. And it was about self-belief, self-esteem, self-confidence, emotional IQ, so they're emotionally intelligent. They know how to deal with issues and emotions and feelings and tribulations and trials. This is what young people need. They need to feel a sense of belonging, security. All of these, you know, there's six human needs that we have. Those are a couple of them. You know, there's certainty. All of these things. And I thought, I need to give these children some truth. Where they come from. Everything has a manufacturer. In this room, every single thing. Not one thing bang popped up. Not one thing you hoped for and it came. No, it had a manufacturer. Someone designed it and it was purposely designed for a reason. And I'm teaching these young people what you're the greatest creation. So how come you don't have a manufacturer? I want to teach you truth. Understand where you're coming from and that you have been designed for a reason and a purpose. That puts value on you, not only your life, but everybody else that you look at.
That's powerful, powerful message that you're, I mean, that is coaching, that's mentoring, that's empowering, that's inspiring
Straight. Many
of our young people today who are caught up in gun and knife crime.
Exactly.
You know, a couple of weeks back, your son also had his name as part of the Queen's Park Rangers stand as well.
Yeah.
I mean, a great honour to be called the Kyan Prince.
Listen, I'll tell you something, yeah? My son, Kyan, God has blessed him even in his death. Because how many young people that have been stabbed are able to walk up and see their name outside a prominent stadium like Queen's Park Rangers? So it's not Loftus Road Stadium. It's Kyan Prince Foundation Stadium. So I feel like there's an obligation and a purpose for us to highlight all the other children, represent those children, and be able to reach out to those and empower their minds, inspire them to go for their potential and not join this knife thing and actually begin to value each other, create the communities you want. So for us, it's our purpose to be able to reach out and put other young people's name out there, recognize and value their lives, even though they're gone, they've been stabbed and killed, that we remember them. And it's not just about Kyan. It's about the people that don't have a voice. It's about the people that haven't had the platform that I've had, that we could be able to talk about them and reach out and do something on, for their behalf as well.
Powerful. And Mark, we could spend a lot of time talking about so many other things.
Yeah, because we ain't even addressed the Queen with the OBE. Because like God's been too good, you know.
Your OBE, honorary doctorate as well.
I didn't ask for any of these things. Honorary doctorate, OBE. I didn't expect anything.
But I think people appreciate how you've turned the negative into a positive.
Yeah.
And you've rechanneled your energy from boxing to now using and reaching people's minds, young people's minds.
That's it.
Which is, you
know. So that's where the doctor comes in. Because the doctor's healing. Yeah. And that's why I always ask God about that. Where was that come in?
Yeah.
But I'm healing people's mindsets.
Yeah.
You know, I might not have that degree to understand how to fix ailments and operations, but I know about the mind.
Yeah.
And what did God come to teach you about the kingdom to renew the mind? Because this kingdom mindset is what's having us conditioned and thinking and dealing with fear. The new kingdom that Jesus Christ came to preach about, you don't deal with the spirit of fear. It's empowerment, it's greatness, it's being able to be free and being able to have a clean heart.
Absolutely. Mark, thank you so much for your time, and it's been a powerful and inspiring interview with you. I believe that this is just the cusp of what's going to happen.
No doubt. It's only the beginning.
So much energy.
Yeah.
And God's going to use you in a most powerful way.
We're doing a national campaign right now, inspiring future champions.
Excellent.
So we're going to hit all the schools across London.
Okay.
So if anyone wants to contact us, go on the website, contact us, and we'll come into your school.
Thank you. Well, Mark, may God richly bless you and your family, and may you continue to do what you're doing to inspire and encourage somebody who's thinking that there's no hope in their life.
Beautiful.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Nice.
All right.